This is The Pulse. I'm Bharati Jagdish. Now, one of the major themes in Parliament in the past week was inequality, addressing it as a national priority. The Prime Minister, ministers and MPs weighed in on this, but what will it really take to tackle this issue going forward? Among the other issues, of course, was growing the economy, also in a way designed to tackle inequality. Joining me to talk about these issues are political analyst Eugene Tan and chief editor of Channel News Asia's digital news desk, Jamie Ho. Let's start off by talking about what you guys took away from the debate as a whole. Several issues were brought up, tackling inequality and social mobility, stimulating social mobility among them. Eugene, your thoughts first.
It is clearly now a national issue. So I think it's something that the government will be focusing on it, not just in the next couple of years, but certainly, you know, in the decade. I mean, these are issues that you can't deal with it in just one term of government. But I felt that so far, you know, while the messaging is, I think, would accord well with many people, I think we still need more details, more concrete policies. And I think until we have that, you know, it's probably still too early to say, you know, how bold the measures are going to be and whether we will be able to manage this issue, you know, which I think is a developing fault line in our society.
What makes you say, Eugene, that there weren't concrete policies unveiled?
Well, I think, you know, I had expected some more details. Maybe it was an unfair expectation on my part, you know, but I was certainly hoping that, you know, the government, you know, would use the opportunity of the debate on the president's address, you know, to furnish some details about what could be done. Because I think the expectation had been raised, you know, through the president's address, talking about bold changes. But I think what came through is, you know, indications of, you know, where they might go, but nothing concrete. And I felt, you know, for me, given the urgency of the matter, more could be done even at this early stage.
Some issues were mentioned, some policies in regard to education, but nothing we haven't heard before. Yeah. For instance, changing the PSLE scoring system and things like that. Jamie, what do you make of all of this?
Yeah,
not substantive enough?
Yeah, I sort of feel a little bit the same as what Eugene said as well, because the president sort of set the stage and set the expectations of some, as we know, bold changes. And then we've had a week where, as Eugene said again, maybe not as much specifics as we would have hoped. I suppose to sort of balance that off, to be a little bit more generous maybe, is at least we have actually brought the issue of income equality, for example, into the national spotlight. So even if we can't jump from a president's address to policy statements now in the space of a week, I think maybe, and that's the hope therefore, that this sets the stage for national discussion on the issue, policy formulation, and really looking into specific areas that need to be tweaked. So education, obviously, is one. But I suppose there were also other gaps which may not have been discussed as well, because we were discussing this off-air just now. Other issues which may not have been addressed during the debate. But
such
for,
as taxes, such
exactly.
as do we need to increase wealth taxes to finance more spending on things like education, on levelling up in other ways as well?
Yeah, precisely, right? Yeah.
But Eugene, what sort of bold changes would you have liked to have heard?
I would have certainly liked to see discussion about, you know, this whole idea of what do we mean by inequalities. And because I think, you know, we have varying ideas, you know, and the discussion so far is centred very much on income inequality. I think it's also important to look at wealth inequality, because the whole notion of privilege and wealth being transmitted from one generation to another, I think, you know, that does impact upon inequality, you know, no matter how you look at it. I think we also need to separate social mobility. The education minister, Mr. Ong Ye Kung, talked about how inequality was greater when Singapore became independent. I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that. I believe, you know, he has information to back that up. But I would argue that social mobility, you know, in the first 30 to 40 years of our independence, you know, was a lot faster, because in a way there were more opportunities, that was shared, you know, by all.
We have to also bear in mind that we saw meteoric economic growth during those years that would have inadvertently contributed to social mobility. How likely is it that we might see that kind of growth ever again in Singapore?
Yeah, so I think it's going to become a lot harder, right? Because the Prime Minister, you know, when he jumped in, you know, with his response to the President's address, spoke about how, you know, economic growth is likely to be in the region of 2 to 4%. So that means a greater challenge, right? A greater challenge because we now wouldn't have, you know, the benefit of economic growth. But that also means that we need to harness whatever national resources we have, you know, in a more targeted way, because we wouldn't have that lift, you know, that is created by...
Although he did say that there is still room to grow and innovate and...
But certainly not in... You know,
not on that scale.
Yes, not on the scale that is before. And I think that raises questions because Singaporeans today, the younger ones, are familiar with the first world Singapore. You know, and so they will ask, what is it that there's going to be in it for us? And so the expectations are going to be there. And that's something that the government will need to address as well. But if I go back to your question, you know,
about what sorts of bold changes would you have liked to have seen?
You know, the system must also recognize that even as people seek to move up, there must be people moving down as well. And I don't know whether this is something that has been brought across in as clear terms as it should, you know, because you will have, you know, the privileged group who will resist any attempts to reduce the sort of privileges and advantages that they would have. And so when you talk about an issue like inequality, you know, in order for people to move up, you know, some people would have to move down. And it is this moving up and moving down, you know, that keeps the system vibrant, active, and dynamic. And I think that's something which we need to discuss.
Downward mobility becomes a problem if people start making those comparisons, though. But if everyone is given a basic level of benefits in order to meet their basic needs, would that be so difficult? Would that be so hard to accept, Jamie?
What are you talking about, for example, a universal welfare? Is that...
If we talked about some measure of universal welfare, even though, you know, clearly Minister Ong Ye Kung came out to say
quickly do, yeah, to
that is not the way to go.
No, I think I would sort of go back to where we were maybe 2 minutes ago when we were talking about growth, right? And we had the 80s, which were meteoric, never to be repeated kind of growth, which in effect brought up a whole generation of Singaporeans, right? And in bringing them up, it was a very different type of quality of growth as well, which again, I don't think we're going to be seeing as well. The kind of growth that we've seen since then has been very, very mixed, which has probably led to some of the inequalities that we're seeing now. And what I fear is that as you see in certain developed countries, and we hope that we'll never get there, that you see a new generation of children whom parents fear will never be as good or as well off as they were. And this is through no fault of the children's doing. They may have had the same education level, for example. If you had an education university degree in 1970, your options are going to be far greater than if you just had a university degree today. So I think a lot more needs to be done. And this then goes on to the issue of what you do in circumstances like this. Is universal welfare, is a universal income, universal basic income, the kind of leveling up that you need given these changes? And the thing about Singapore that's so unique, you have two generations which are so close together, having gone through such different types of growth, so close together and seeing it right in front of them, both intergenerationally and within the generation, it's going to be tough. And I think that's why precisely the government has decided that they need to make this a national discussion. Obviously, we would hope to have more sort of details, but, you know, let's see. And I agree with Eugene that taxes and sort of attempts at a little bit of, I know leveling down sounds a bit crude and a bit cruel, but I think that maybe has to be done. Make people talk about when you do that, how do you do that, and is there national buy-in to do that?
You mentioned, Eugene, an apprehension that there will be resistance from the wealthy on this issue. Mm. The government has talked about the possibility of capital gains tax and wealth taxes before, saying that it wouldn't be wise to just implement them because that would affect our position, Singapore's position, as an investment hub, as a wealth generation hub as well. So there are all these trade-offs that need to be made, aside from the ones you mentioned as well.
I mean, certainly, you know, taxes would have other implications as well, but I don't think we should foreclose them. Much as I know we have to be a global city, but it's also important to recognize that for the vast majority of people living on this island, this is their country as well. And so, you know, if we have these inequalities, I think they would ultimately undermine the attractiveness of Singapore as a place to live, to work, and to play. I'm also concerned about how people might resent, you know, the system, because they would feel that their station in life, you know, is in a way predetermined, you know, by the families that they were born into. And I think it is this sort of immobility, this sort of situation where people feel that it is not about your know-how, but about your know-who that will get you ahead in life, that I think that will undermine, you know, what has made Singapore tick, what has made Singapore work very well. You know, this egalitarian meritocratic streak, you know, is something that I think we should continue to preserve.
So if we talk about taxing the wealthy more, for instance, yes, then there will be more money to spend. What should it be spent on?
Well, put it this way as well. I mean, I think taxes are obviously a fiscal tool, economic tool. But I think increasingly, as part of maybe this new national conversation that's going to come up, taxation also is a sort of political slash social signal as well, in that this is a government's way of saying that this is the way the government thinks, and there's national buy-in into what that particular tax means. That those in the upper income groups figure out that that is sort of the social compact that has been reached. We haven't really gotten there yet. I think that's why maybe hopefully this is the start of the conversation. And I think it's also been sort of mentioned a little bit in Parliament that there is need to be talking about this new compact. And I think that's very important.
What about the fears that if this is done, there will be less of an incentive to work harder to make more money?
I think that's a valid concern, Bharathi. So what it means is that, you know, even as you attempt to deal with inequality in a decisive way, we have to be mindful of unintended consequences. You know, we don't want a situation in which, for example, there is this resentment against those who have done well, whether academically or professionally. You know, I think there is a need for us to differentiate between elites and elitism. When we talk about this sort of issue, and I agree with Jamie when he says about, you know, the need for that national conversation, for that buy-in, you know, as to how the social compact is going to evolve. Jamie also brought a very interesting point, right? The question of whether we should be now focusing a lot more on equity rather than equality, you know. So this is where, you know, if we look at dealing with social inequality, we need to be mindful of whether our system encourages the hoarding of opportunities. You know, does a certain group, you know, have a disproportionate amount of opportunities? You know, so then the question then becomes, how do we ensure that, you know, that there is equitable access, you know, rather than equality of access? Because we also don't want the opposite situation where opportunities are given to individuals who may not at that point in time be ready to take advantage of those opportunities.
Even with equitable access, we should point out there will be unequal outcomes.
I think the accessibility is important because, yeah, you know, everyone can run a 100-meter race, you know, but do the competitors line up at the starting line, you know, disadvantage. You know, they may not have the relevant gear, they may not have the proper training, you know. So while the race is open to all, you know, that has been very much the Singapore concept, which I think is good, but I think we need to develop that further and ensure that everyone who lines up at the starting line is able to compete equally.
So let's talk about what I actually alluded to earlier. If taxes go up, so on and so forth, and there is buy-in, and we see that ideal situation that each of you alluded to in different ways earlier, with all this money, where should it go? How should it be spent in order to create the situation you just talked about, Eugene?
Education for me would be, you know, education has always been that great social leveler. Although in recent years
it hasn't been.
I've asked myself, you know, whether, you know, education in state has accentuated the social differences. You know, so I think it's important for us to put the money into education, you know, to ensure that someone from a less advantaged background would have the same sort of opportunities, you know, as someone who comes from a well-to-do background.
Who can afford tuition and enrichment classes.
Yeah, and also the sort of experiences, you know, whether you're talking about global exposure. Because I think, you know, in the end, it is important for those who come from not well-to-do backgrounds, you know, to have those opportunities as well. And then a lot depends on then what they make of those opportunities. I think here it is important to recognize that, you know, even as we provide opportunities, you know, to all, we'll also bear in mind, in a way, another important principle, which is that even as we try to provide more opportunities for every individual, we must not lose sight of, you know, letting each individual, each child, you know, to reach his or her full potential. Right, so we shouldn't go for that equalizing effect, you know that just because not many people can reach that level, so we're not going to help or encourage, you know, that individual, that child, to reach his or her full potential.
In other words, let's not level down.
Yes, right. I think we must be very mindful about leveling up, you know, and so I think even as we put more resources into education, I think what is important for me, I feel, is that we need to look at how these policies and these resources are implemented. You know, so we have very good schemes, you know, such as whether it's direct school admission or whether we're talking about, you know, giving priority to old boys and old girls of schools. But I think we mustn't lose sight of what these policies are intended to, and we must also be careful, you know, that they don't create differences.
But the very policies you just mentioned do create differences, don't they?
They do, but
even direct school admission.
No, but Bharathi, my view is that it is a question of more of how they are implemented. Schools have allowed these systems to be game, you know, so parents game the system. So so what used to be, you know, admitting pupils because of certain special abilities that they have, you know, became normalized as general academic ability.
Parents giving their kids sports tuition and things like that.
So I think in the end, you know, while these are good schemes, you know, they could give rise to perception, you know, that they are meant to privilege a certain group. You know, so I think even as we put more resources, we must be focused about how those resources are used and thinking about how do they provide for access to opportunities.
For every student, for every child. Jamie?
I'm sort of in two minds here, because on the one hand, we must recognize that actually at the most basic level, the state-provided, state-sanctioned education that we have in Singapore actually is excellent, right? Mm-hmm. The opportunities that kids get, the sort of the range of things that they're exposed to is also, I think, internationally right up there with the best. But everything in life, ultimately, however, unfortunately, is relative. And everyone compares not just internationally, they compare to their classmates.
Yep.
And the fact of the matter is that there is, even though at that level the state has provided well for us, because of the degrees of inequality, the wealth that's been growing, the opportunities that others have been provided, the perception of the gap in opportunities has grown. So even if the base is still well and good, that gap is going to continue to grow. And I think that's where...
And there will be gaps in outcome as well.
And there will be gaps in outcome as well. So where do you start to address the issue at hand? Do you, as we were talking about, do you level down or do you try to level up? But the fact of the matter, even if you level up, the fact of the matter is the gap will always still be there to some extent, because there is still the larger sort of wealth that's growing and the gaps between income levels. So therefore...
Can't expect the wealthy to say, you know what, I have all this money, but I'm not going to spend it on my child.
Lead to a sort of an arms race, right? I mean, for lack of a better term, that wherever you start, it's just going to get more and more. And at some point, I think rather than sort of policy tweaks, again, it goes back to the sort of a culture, a sort of a national conversation. Where are we actually at? Of course, it's a bit too airy-fairy to suggest that the country as a whole will come to some sort of a national agreement. But I think at some point, the government itself will probably have to stake its stand and then let the people do as they wish. But as again, this always goes back round and round, people will still game the system.
I don't think we should be expecting zero inequality here,
yes,
right? I mean, we have to take into account the fact that it will persist. It's a matter of narrowing that gap.
Definitely. You know, so Jamie is right, you know, and I think this is where the national conversation must be very clear, you know, that there will always be gaps, right? But the whole intent, you know, is to reduce that gap, and that you know, the whole exercise or attempt, you know, to reduce inequality in our society is not going to result in equalization of outcomes. It is human nature, you know, parents would want to transmit their privileges, their advantages, their wealth, you know, to the next generation.
But the system should not be encouraging that.
Yes, and the system should also ensure, right, that even as parents seek to transmit these advantages, it is not done at the expense of others. It is not done at the expense of society. Right?
You mentioned off air earlier that even priority admission for children of alumni can be problematic. priority admission into schools?
Yes, I mean priority admission, you know, whether at the primary level, you know, where policy now says that, you know, at least 40 places, right, in every school will be reserved for pupils who are not affiliated. And then if you talk about secondary school, you know, there are means of trying to give those who come from an affiliated primary school, you know, certain benefits in terms of points for admission. I think we need to be bolder and increase, you know, the number of places that would be available for those who are not affiliated. You know, because it is true, having this open system where people can move in and move out, that will keep the system going.
But you see, we obsess about these issues because of the perception, or many might say the reality, that some schools are clearly better than others and places in certain schools are more sought after than others. If we went a different way and made sure that indeed every school is a good school and provides a high standard of education, broad-based education, helping to nurture every child, then it wouldn't be an issue. Admissions and all the various criteria wouldn't be an issue, would it?
I think this whole thing about, we just talk about specifically about this schools and old boys clubs and alumni and things like that. I think my personal view actually is that a lot of this is just in people's minds. Sort of like the benefit or the why people want to send their kids from one school to another because you went to that school. I think that, to be very frank,
there's the prestige factor, of course.
But I think over time, people will get over it. There are obviously some very key schools which we don't need to mention. But I think over time, we will get away from that sort of mindset. Actually, the key point is what kind of signal the government sends in terms of setting the enrollment numbers for each of these schools. That is more a political signal than anything else, because the bigger problem lies in people's perceptions, and it's something that parents have to get over as well.
Going forward, since both of you have called for bolder changes and expressed some disappointment that the issues that were raised weren't bold enough, what do you think the key thrust ought to be? Maybe, Eugene, anything else aside from education, or is this the track they should stick to?
I think education is that key social leveler, and we must do our best, you know, to continue to ensure that it remains that way. Also, have a system in which, you know, those who can soar high are also given the necessary support, you know. So we are in a way trying to raise everyone, you know, to their full potential. I think it's important, and I think Jamie alludes to it very strongly, you know, that we need that mindset change, you know, that this attempt to deal with social inequality is something that will also benefit, you know, the groups that are privileged in the current setup. Because a society that it has inequalities, you know, will not be one, you know, that will be dynamic, you know, that will attract investments, that will have that vibrancy, you know, to sustain, you know, those activities. So I think, you know, the point ought to be that, you know, we all have a stake in society becoming equal, and that, you know, I think it is also important to recognize that we need, even as we talk about social inequality, to enhance our social safety net. I think part of the concern is that very often people worry about, you know, what if they don't make it? You know, and I think sometimes that then gets parents into the overdrive mode, you know, where they try to do their best, you know, to ensure that their children would have a better future than them. And parents, you know, as has been shown, you know, will go to extraordinary ends, you know, to do so. So I think, you know, if we have a system in which, you know, if anyone falls through, you know, despite their best efforts, you know, that they will still be able to have a decent living, a life with dignity, I think that would certainly make us, you know, better equipped, you know, to deal with inequalities.
Jamie, you talked about having a national conversation about this. What sorts of signals can the government send out in order to create the best environment for this type of a national conversation?
I was just trying to figure out how to sum this up, because I think we are really at this sort of very critical juncture where really the government, I think, at the back of its spine probably realizes that it's faced with quite unprecedented challenges in terms of two things. One, on social sort of issues, I think there is quite clearly a need to sort of do a little bit of a leftward shift, right? And I think everyone knows that these leftward shifts always makes people slightly uncomfortable, but I think that's the way that we're going when you talk about income inequality, when you talk about what to do with taxes. All these things signal that we need to move maybe there a little bit. But at the same time, because of what's going on globally, even more we need to keep an eye that we don't drop the ball in terms of our economic competitiveness, our attractiveness, in terms of a source for foreign investments and things like that. So at the same time, you need to be even sharper on the right as far as your economic trajectory is concerned.
It's a fine balance.
It's a very, very fine balance. It's going to get harder and harder on both sides. And how do you manage the two sort of competing demands is going to be key. But at the end of the day, I think that conversation will be needed to see what the overall sort of conversation lands in terms of what are we as a country. The thing about Singapore, which has always been unique, is that we've never seen ourselves as socialists or capitalists or whatever. We sort of pragmatic in everything that we do. Mm. But after a while...
A big part of the narrative is about self-reliance.
Exactly. Yeah. But that will need to shift. Because as Eugene said, I think precisely where we are today, we do need a little bit more social assurance for people. And I think that is only natural. I think that's only fair that we sort of move in that direction.
Many thanks to both of you for joining me today on The Pulse. We've been talking about social mobility, income inequality, wealth inequality. Let's hope we do start seeing some bold changes in the near future. Political analyst Eugene Tan and chief editor of Channel News Asia's Digital News Desk, Jamie Ho, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.